Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair has covered the CFL, four Olympics, and eight World Series, including one during an earthquake. So yeah, live radio is a piece of cake. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. So Richard Deitch and I are getting into it. You claim that you just heard Andrew Nye say oot.
I mean, it was closer to oot than out.
See,
but by the way, let's not tag me as the ugly American here. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but there is a distinctive difference in how the two countries say the word out.
See, I have this debate with people all the time. I don't hear it. Out.
Well, maybe you've been in the States for so long. There was a little bit of a lint of oot in that update.
Okay.
This is the most passionate you've been all week, by the way.
No, it's
Thank
not.
You.
No, it's not. It's because people always, and I don't hear it. And I try to, I try to hear it, but I don't. It's like people always talk about, about. I said, well, that's how you say it, about. And they said, no, it sounds like a boot. I said, I don't know any Canadian who says boot.
By the way, where does this intro for Jonah Carey rank on all his intros? This has got to be like one of the...
Oh, this will be one. So you really don't want to talk about this. This is what you call changing the subject.
No, I'm happy.
You don't want to defend the fact
I'll talk
that
about linguistics all day.
I mean,
you're going to lose your giant share of the audience that you've had over the last couple of years. But yeah, there's no doubt...
Share of the audience.
I will say this. There's nothing better than when Canadians say organization versus organization, as we say in the States. That is a cool sound.
Organization.
But I have heard Canadians say oot more than out.
No.
Yes.
No.
Jeff, your headphones just went flying.
I know.
You really are taking this personally.
I failed to believe that. Anyhow.
Good intro back into the show, though. I like it.
Yeah, well, it's okay.
You're firing on all marks here.
I don't know about that. We will have Ross Atkins news conference at 10:30. We'll carry it live. Kevin Barker will join us in studio for that. We'll break it down. I don't know what the hell we're going to break down for an hour with Barker. We got to get Bundesliga picks in there. I mean, here's how we're going to break it down. Jose Bautista was plan F for the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays were plan D for Jose. There's your breakdown.
Yes, I love Red Bull.
Yeah, that's Barker's.
His drop?
It's his drop.
Yeah.
We got a couple of tough names. See, this is no fun because the Bundesliga this year got rid of some of the difficult names. They got rid of some of the 17-syllable names. And now
I'm going Leipzig.
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 What's...
By the way, I just heard from Andrew Nye. Did I pronounce his last name correctly?
Yes.
On Twitter.
No, you pronounce it Nye. Is how we pronounce it in Canada. Andrew Nye.
Right. Andrew Nye, who just says bite. Jesus. He just says bite me, Richard Deitch. I said out as an ow. So I've now been called out.
That's all right. Travis, you going to get Jonah? You're just going to sit there and chat? Anyhow. Jonah Carey, we're bringing him on because, of course, Tim Raines got into the Hall of Fame. Congratulations to Tim Raines, by the way. Tim Raines, Ivan Rodriguez, who didn't need my vote to get into the Hall of Fame. And Jeff Bagwell, who I gave a sympathy vote for, too, just because I was tired of hearing people whine about Jeff Bagwell not being in. So those three are going into the Hall of Fame. Trevor Hoffman, Vladdy Guerrero not making it. They'll make it the next ballot. Barry Bonds and Richard Clemens.
Richard Clemens. I love that. He's one of my favorite pitchers.
Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Also positioned, I think, to go in at some point in the next three or four ballots. So there you go. Justice being served. But the reason we're bringing Jonah Carey on is because, Richard, he made it his life's ambition for the past 4 years to get Tim Raines in. And he's been very emotional. He's been very pointed about his belief that Tim Raines should be in, perhaps never more so than on MLB Network. We've got to play this for Jonah Carey as an intro. Go ahead. Our very good friend,
Jonah,
Chris
can I ask
Russo.
You that?
I'm 42 years old.
42 years old. So in 1981, Raines' first big year, how old were you?
I was seven, Chris.
Okay, so you can't even evaluate. You never saw him play. A seven-year-old cannot evaluate Raines. I was 22 years of age. I grew up in the same. I went to college where he went. Where he grew up. So I saw Raines play more than you did.
There you go, Jonah. Well, I'll tell you, he took you to the woodshed. It was unbelievable.
you know, if you're trying to get my goat this early in the morning, I can come back at you, Blair. I know things about you.
Yeah, I know.
Here's the thing. Okay, that's the most spurious argument ever. Therefore, and then he brought up 1933 as if he can. But by the way, neither of us were alive in 1933.
Right.
It was a very funny argument, and my favorite part of the argument was, I'm literally the world's, at least if not the foremost expert on the Expos, top two or three, definitely the lead world's foremost expert on Tim Raines. And oh, by the way, there were no out of market games wherever he lived in New York or Mongolia or whatever.
I was going to say.
I lived in freaking Montreal. I went to the games. I was there. I don't care if I was 7 or -2 years old. He didn't watch any of those games. They were. You know how many times Tim Raines was on the Game of the Week during his career?
Zip.
He said it. One time.
Vince Scully,
May 2nd, 1987. You know how I know that? Because I'm the world's foremost expert on Tim Raines. That's how.
Yeah, that for having grown up in New York City and having listened to Russo spew his nonsense for decades.
No, let me just interrupt. The one thing he did say, if you go back and listen to it, he said seeing Raines in away games.
Right.
So he covered his ass a little bit there. So my guess is what? What do you figure? Chris Russo saw Tim Raines in person, Jonah, what, 4 times in his lifetime?
Well, Chris and I are friendly. There's obviously a lot of theater involved. I'm now familiar with what it's like to be a WWE wrestler to be on a show with Skip Bayless, I guess. But, you know, since for the purpose of hyperbole, the normal answer would be maybe he saw him 15 times. I saw him several hundred. But I'm going to say 0 times anyway, because you know what? He's not here. I can say what I want.
That's right.
Well, the thing that's, and Jonah hit on it, the thing that's interesting, again, having heard Russo and his nonsense for so long, this would be a guy who would talk about Willie McCovey, Willie Mays, you know.
Of course.
Tris Speaker, Cap Anson. So his argument is just nonsense. And, you know, it was certainly good theater, but... Jonah, as I tweeted out, to me it was Tyson Spinks. So I enjoyed very much your intellectually pounding him into the ground in 30 seconds.
The looking at the nails was a nice touch.
Well, you know what's interesting? Richard covers media, so he could speak to this. And, I mean, he covers it all the time. I've been on MLB Network a bunch of times, and I try to give coaching points. And I have a very upbeat personality, but generally I try to be pretty level, whatever. And that show, I mean, not only producers, the head of marketing emailed me and said, we made a gif of it. You want to tweet it? Go ahead, whatever. They appreciate that 20 times more than other stuff, which
Correct. It's
fine. Like, it was fun. But I think it would be exhausting to do it every day. I think the people like that, who have that kind of personality, are on the air every day doing that. Man, that's tough. And I guess that's the state of television.
Well, Jonah, you got a sense of why the Skip Baylessization, Tucker Carlson, why these guys have shows and why they want more than anything else conflict and debate, because that's the kind of stuff that can get some traction on social media. But yeah, if you're someone like you, Jonah, who I think likes to think and likes to offer something with a little bit of, you know, intellectual heft, that's not the place for you. That would be like a North Korean prison. I would avoid that at all costs.
Well, listen, I did email afterwards and I say, if you want me to co-host the show with Russo permanently and pay me just half his salary, I send you.
All right. So what are you going to do now that Raines is in? First of all, congratulations. But now, what's the next thing? Return of baseball to Montreal? What's the next thing? What's the next?
Well, I read your column, Jeff, and I was amused by it. It made me feel like Don Quixote. Like, I've accomplished the impossible dream. I've tilted at windmills long enough, and now I need to find a new quest. One thing that I talked about with Ryan Thibodeau, which I haven't really said publicly yet, but, you know, this whole Hall of Fame thing, and it's great for the players, great for the fan base or whatever, but I have this whole thing where if I could help the world, that would be nice. I'm an idealist. I never kind of stopped being an idealist. So my thought was, we put together this kind of thing. I don't know the logistics, but where everybody who's out there for the Hall of Fame, we have a charity drive, basically. So we say, hey, Seattle, you're falling behind. You want Edgar Martinez in? Support the Seattle Children's Hospital. Hey, Denver, where I live, you should support the Denver Food Bank. Every vote for Larry Walker raises $10 or whatever. I don't know exactly how that'll work. But I think it'd be really cool if there was like a multi-city movement, especially among these Mussina, Walker, Bonds, Clemens guys who've been on the ballot for a while. I think that would be fun. So that first, and then maybe we'll try to get the Expos back after that.
It looks, doesn't it, as if Vladdy gets in next year. He should have been in this year, but it looks as if he gets in next year. It looks like Trevor Hoffman gets in next year. But what really has kind of intrigued me, moving away just from Tim Raines for a minute, I'll come back to that. But it's like, you know what? It's like the steroid cloud's been almost lifted. It's like when Bud Selig was put in by whatever the hell that committee's called, the Golden Era Committee or whatever it is, it's like all of a sudden it became okay to vote for steroid dudes. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, A lot of people interpret it that way, certainly. They looked at it, and it might have been that people were kind of looking for, I don't want to say an excuse, but a reason, you know, because it's preposterous to have it's just a museum, right? It's a museum in upstate New York. It's a lovely place, Cooperstown's a nice town. But it's a museum that records the history of baseball, and the history of baseball is completely absent guys from the 70s and especially the 80s, and all of the 90s, some of these guys are still coming onto the ballot, but that's absent too. And a lot of that has to do with PEDs. A lot of it has to do with missing. You know, they missed on Alan Trammell. They missed on Lou Whitaker. They had missed on Tim Raines. And yeah, they're missing on Bonds and Clemens. Put an asterisk on it. You can put a needle on his plaque if you want to, but Barry Bonds is the baddest thing ever any of us have ever seen, and we all know this. It's not a secret. So, you know, just go ahead and do it. I'm not a moralist. I acknowledge that, everybody, Baby Boomer's hero, Maze Mantle, all these guys, they were all on amphetamines, which is also a performance enhancer of some sort. Let's not get too cute about it. We'll put them in the Hall of Fame and handle it however you want to handle it.
And this would be for both you guys, actually. Jeff, I'd be curious of your take, too. I was reading my colleague Tom Verducci today, and in one of his points on the Hall of Fame and sort of 10 observations as to what's going to happen heading forward, he believes with the voters now having to be transparent and everyone making their ballots public, we're going to see more groupthink in terms of the voting. And he predicts, and I think he's probably correct on this, that either Derek Jeter or Mariano Rivera will be the first unanimous Hall of Famer beyond 100% of the ballots. Jonah, how do you think the transparency that's going to come up with everybody making their ballots public will ultimately impact the vote?
Yeah, I think that's right. We could see the 100% vote. That's certainly possible. Personally, I don't know. Maybe it's a big deal for other people, but, you know, the moment they announced Reigns' name, I did a big dance. It could have been 75.1. It wouldn't have made a difference to me. And I imagine for the player, 91, 95, it's all the same. So I think that's possible. I think the group thing is already affecting people to some extent. You know, you've got this situation now where someone like Reigns, if you didn't vote for Reigns, you would get harangued on social media. Not by me. I'm not going to do that because I'm white and I'm Canadian or whatever. But there are people on Twitter who are going to go harass you, or Bonds or Clemens or Bagwell or whoever you vote for, if you do make your ballot public. Now that we're doing it for everybody, yeah, sure. I think that's a real possibility.
You know, I one of the things that I found really interesting about Reigns' candidacy too, Jonah, and you know, beside, and you're right, I think in a lot of ways that may have been the first, he may have been the first social media elected player, which is fine because of the era he played in. He played for a team that didn't get a lot of coverage. He played at a time where there wasn't Twitter. And I made the point in my column that if Tim Raines' career had been pushed back a couple of years and Tim Raines, and this was his first year on the ballot, with Twitter, 24-hour news cycle, Tim Raines would have been a freaking star.
Yeah.
The way he played. He'd be electrifying people.
Absolutely.
Well, that's it. And, you know, he's perceived as this analytical candidate, which he is to some extent. And people talk about his on-base percentage and stolen-base success percentage and all that. But for those of us who watched him, I mean, he was just electric. And the thing that I came back to, I've written about Reigns and talked about Reigns 10,000 times. But I referred to the scoreboard chickens, Jeff, which you remember well. Mm-hmm. They had this very lo-fi scoreboard. And if the pitchers were over to first base, there'd be a chicken that would pop up and it would cluck. And when you're 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, which I was during Reigns' first years, it's the best. It's so funny. They're clucking throughout the stadium. And Reigns knew this, and he would try to get pitchers to throw over 10 or 12 times just to mess with them. And it was fantastic. And so, you know, think about the vines that would come out of this. Think about the Instagram videos, all that stuff. Of course he would have been like that. Him and Ricky, obviously, would have been the other one. They were counterparts. Ricky was a better player, but Reigns had that same DNA, and he was absolutely electrifying. So it's so funny that we're talking about him as this Bill James candidate. Oh, Tim Raines, you got the numbers. You just have to look deeper. No, man, he was just he's a badass. You know, he was incredible to watch.
Oh, really, man. He was, I don't know if you would call him a five-tool player, because I don't know how good his defense was when he was drafted or all that. But he's an analytics guy. But, you could be – I don't care who you're scouting for. If you walked out to a high school field, Joan, and you saw high school Tim Raines playing, you'd go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right, of course.
I mean, you don't need it. You don't need analytics. You just go, oh, my God, look at this kid.
And the thing is, he envisioned himself being a running back for University of Florida. That was his kind of great ambition. He was a terrific running back. You know, that low center of gravity, muscular legs, 5'8", 180, 190. That's perfect. You know, that's exactly what you want. And it goes to his athleticism. It goes to the fact that he could, you know, just speed and power and all that stuff. He had all of those things. So it happens that he ended up a baseball player, but he was truly a wonderful athlete, sort of a mini version of Bo Jackson.
Do you know, Jeff, what the most interesting thing for me, this is just a warped take, but the most interesting thing for me of the Hall of Fame yesterday, I saw that Curt Schilling got into an online Twitter fight with someone impersonating Sidney Ponson.
Fake Sidney Ponson.
Fake Sidney Ponson. That's incredible, actually, if you think about it.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, but by the way, Schilling has gotten into a lot of hot water for the things that he said. I do not have a Hall of Fame ballot. I need 10 years as a BBWA writer, but I would vote for him.
So would I.
We're in the middle of a culture war right now, and I don't think enough of myself to think I've got any nuclear weapons, but I might have a few small ones, and the ones I have are aimed at Curt Schilling. I wouldn't vote for Curt Schilling if he was the last person on the planet. I'd close the Hall of Fame. Here's the thing. I, as you well know, I'm not afraid to let my personal feelings interfere with how I vote for the Hall of Fame, which is why I was one of, four people to vote for Jorge Posada. That aside, though, I'm sorry, if you've basically said to people in my profession that they should be hung, I'm not voting for you. I will never vote for you. I will never vote for Curt Schilling. And I had this discussion with Bob Ryan. Bob Ryan said, we know Curt. Curt didn't mean it. Well, yeah, Donald Trump. We thought Donald Trump didn't mean 90% of the stuff he said. Guess what? He meant 95% of the stuff he said. So, I understand the argument for Curt Schilling totally, but I'll tell you what, I think Curt Schilling, he'll eventually get in, but my guess is Curt Schilling is going to wait another 9-10 years to get in. I really believe that.
Well, it's an interesting thing about Trump and Schilling and all this stuff. As a Canadian living on this side of the border, I feel like my eyes are open to America. Well, granted, this is extreme, but my eyes are open to American politics. It sort of doesn't matter if you mean it or not, right? I mean, if you're sweeping up hysteria, you're getting people talking about border walls and, this group of people's no good and this group of people's no good and this group of people's no good. And yeah, maybe my fiscal policy agrees with the president or it doesn't or whatever, but you are inciting people to get not only angry, but potentially violent. And if you're talking about lynching journalists or whatever, whether or not he means it, what happens if the first journalist goes and gets lynched? I mean, that's not the greatest thing. There are a lot of unsettled people out there who could do all kinds of things. So the fact that Schilling leans right with his topic, I don't give a crap. It doesn't make a difference to me. But if you're threatening violence, I do understand that. Again, it doesn't affect my Hall of Fame vote. It's just, as you would say, not cool.
You're a better person than I am.
It's interesting, Jeff. I appreciate your honesty. I loathe what Schilling says, especially as a journalist. Yet if I had a Hall of Fame vote, I would vote for him.
Yeah, I kind of side with Verducci on this, and Pedro Gomez made the same point. Look, a lot of people cast ballots that I don't agree with, but that's fine. Everybody's ballot is everybody's ballot. As a matter of fact, Joan, it was our good friend Michael Farber told me one time, one of the beauties of the Hall of Fame ballot is you can, at least in your own mind, screw over people who screwed you over. Farber likes it. Farber likes it. I'm okay with it.
Farber is my hero in sports writing, but it's funny that he's such a level-headed kind of guy that he would say that. Yeah, of course you could do what you want, and it's a privilege that's granted to writers and what have you. And by the way, the Posada vote, if there were more than 10 spots on the ballot, I would consider it too. He's a better candidate than I think people realize.
Jeff,
I think you're right.
Loaded with stars.
Jeff's going to look very good, I think, in hindsight, voting for Posada. I read an interesting piece today by in the States on Deadspin, where the writer, I think really smartly, said, yeah, maybe Posada's not a Hall of Famer, but for not to be on the ballot in the second year is so statistically unfair to him. And then there were some comparisons to some of the great catchers of all time, and he's not that far away. I think he got rooked, I think, pretty bad.
Yeah, I think he was never the guy. I mean, I think there's statistical reasons for voting for him. I also...
Yeah.
I admit I put a lot of stock in postseason, and I know, you go to the postseason when you're on a good team, but man, you catch that many postseason innings, you may have some flaws in your armor as a defensive catcher and all that, and we all know what Jorge's were, but, he was managed by former catchers who seemed to like him enough that they kept running him out there in the postseason, so...
He's also going to hit. Sorry to interrupt you, John. Really, just quick. He also hit lower in that lineup because of all the talent in that lineup. So you put Posada on a different team, and instead of whatever 1,400 hits, maybe he ends up with 1,900, and you think differently about it.
And he's hardly the first guy, by the way, who's not gotten enough support on the first ballot. Kenny Lofton, in my mind, not a candidate for the Hall of Fame. I would vote for Kenny Lofton for the Hall of Fame. He was off after 5%. Lou Whitaker, I would vote for him. He was off after 5%. Jim Edmonds is definitely up there. You could make a case for Jim Edmonds. He was off after 5%. Some of this goes to people just not recognizing subtle skills like walks and doubles and so forth, and that's still the case. I mean, it took 10 years for Tim freaking Raines. But, some of it has to do with the ballot being so crowded now. Even though we're now voting in multiple guys a year and it's starting to clear up, Next year, we got Chipper, Tomei, Roland, Vizquel, and on through Jones. That is a crazy ballot.
Yeah.
You know, we got Vladdy and Hoffman and holdovers, Bonds and Clemens, Edgar, all these guys. You can, in good conscience, say, I totally believe that make up your guy. Billy Wagner, Larry Walker, Edgar Martinez, some guy is a Hall of Famer to me and not be able to vote for them.
Yeah.
And the BBWA lobbied the Hall of Fame and said, can we at least bump it from 10 to 12? To me, it should just be straight up or down. 34 guys, you want to vote 34 or 0, go ahead, vote whatever you want. We just recommended 12. The Hall said no. The Hall loves debate. They love teeth gnashing and all this discussion because otherwise it's just a museum in upstate New York. If I could go crazy about this thing, speak to, you know, what it means and the peculiar rules of it.
Good stuff as always, Jonah. Congratulations. I do mean that seriously. It was a lot of fun watching you lead this crusade, and I'm really happy for Tim Raines, obviously, as well. He should have been in the Hall of Fame right from the get-go. So well done, and don't worry. The next time we talk, we'll talk about something else, I promise.
That sounds good. I hear the Blue Jays have a baseball team, too, so we can get into that.
Apparently. Take care, Jonah.
Cheers, guys.
Jonah Carey is a national baseball writer for SI.com, CBSSports.com, and the Jonah Carey Podcast. So we are going to break now. We're going to join Ross Atkins, media availability at the Rogers Center live. Kevin Barker is going to slide in to join us. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Richard Deitch and Kevin Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. Analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Oh my God, I haven't heard that music for a while. The Baseball Central music, Richard Deitch. Did you know that?
I've not heard that music.
Well, now you
have. Very dramatic and exciting.
It is dramatic and exciting. We were going to play the Barker theme song, Kevin Barker theme song, which we have queued up, but we may play that later. We usually play it when he makes his Bundesliga pitch.
So excited to hear that one.
That voice obviously needs no introduction. Right. Kevin Barker, my Baseball Central co-host, joins us in studio. We pulled him up from the United States just before the inauguration. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your guy getting in.
That's a good
Richard Deitch still in studio alongside us. We're going to be going live to Ross Atkins' media availability at the Rogers Center in a few minutes. Ross Atkins addressing the media with regards to Jose Bautista's contract with the Blue Jays. $18 million this year, a couple of option years, a mutual option year. It's got attendance bonus clauses, and we believe that the third option year kicks in based on games played. So hopefully we can get more from Ross Atkins and that. Kevin, we haven't had a chance to talk since Jose Bautista signed. And we will continue our coverage, by the way, on TV on all our regional networks as well after 11 o'clock, after the end of Ross Atkins' news conference. That will be carried live on TV, and Barker and myself keep you entertained. We'll have a couple of party tricks in the hour after that.
Well, you will.
I will. Are you surprised, Kevin, that Jose Bautista,
not really,
is back?
What other option do they have? That's, you know, when you look at their lineup and how they're going to score runs in the American League East, the Red Sox have gotten better, Yankees going to be better, Tampa Bay is going to be better because they have the pitching they have. The East is going to be better. If you want to contend with the other teams, you have to have the guy protecting the one big asset you have in the offensive side. That's Josh Donaldson. You have to have guys around him, have traffic on the bases, so he can perform up to his ability. And up until then, up until they signed Bautista and, you know, you have no Edwin, why would you pitch to him? Now you have to, I think.
Richard, what's the one unanswered question right now for you about how this whole thing played out?
Well, I think most of the questions have been answered in terms of what the market was for these power hitters and how, obviously, including Edwin, all of them had to take less money than they wanted. To me, the larger question, I think, with where the organization is, and you guys are the experts, not me, is that I'd be curious Kevin's take on this. I think they are really counting on the pitching, especially the starting pitching, to do what they did last year. And I think that is asking a lot in terms of the amount of starts they got. In generally speaking, they were incredibly healthy all year. And so that's my question.
Well, let's see if it gets asked. Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, is on the stage.
Any comment before starting a question and answer? All right, thank you. Thanks for being here. Yeah, it's a good day for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think any time you add a player of this caliber to an organization in baseball, it's a good day. But it's especially a good day for the Toronto Blue Jays for what Jose has meant to this organization and the impact he's had on us winning. Just a couple of things I'd like to add is just, you know, I think, you know, there's in a negotiation like this, it's always a team effort. And this one was especially a team effort. You know, I think baseball operations and, you know, the job that, you know, the team did to first and foremost collaborate. And then secondarily, the leadership of Edward Rogers and his involvement. But I think really important to say the desire of Jose Bautista to be back here was abundantly clear. So, you know, with that, I'd like to open it up to questions and go from there.
Please raise your hand and wait for a microphone to be brought to you. John?
What part did Edward Rogers play in this deal?
Yeah, I think just over time that, you know, as we've, you know, established a relationship, he's become more and more involved. You know, really, I'd rather not get into the specifics of exactly how he was involved, but it was really his leadership and desire to help was abundantly clear.
Ross, it seemed like this wasn't plan A for you guys with the, you know, the run at Dexter Fowler in Washington, and we'd heard some trade rumors in between. How did you wind up circling back, and is it an accurate description that you had other guys ahead on the list?
No, so, you know, you go into an offseason with a plan to make your team better, and it ends up being, you know, your strategy is one thing, and then how, you know, agents and players react is another. So Jose was a clear target for us, and that is a two-way street. So understanding the positions in the market of alternatives and understanding the position of Jose is something that doesn't happen overnight. So, you know, what I can tell you is that Jose at the beginning of the offseason was a very, very good major league player that could help any major league team and a clear target for us. And that started with a qualifying offer. And so then there's a negotiation that occurs, and it's not just with Jose, but it's with all of the alternatives.
Ross, it seemed like a lot of people thought that he might get a Bautista bigger deal, a lot more money. Were you surprised at how the market perhaps changed during the offseason?
You know, I think there was, you know, there's every agent, you know, every team, every executive has an opinion on how things are going to go. A lot of it is very public. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of analysis of it. And then the offseason happens. And you have to stay flexible and you have to stay agile. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we could predict and a lot of things that we couldn't. But as it relates to Jose, I think this is a great deal for Jose and a great deal for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think, you know, part of the creativity that I mentioned at the start was, you know, Jose and his agent, Jay Alou, their thought process on building the mutual option and the vesting option and working together to do something that made sense for both teams was not something that, you know, happens overnight. And, you know, if it is a deal that, you know, ends up being a 3-year deal, we'll both be elated.
Ross, you mentioned to your right, you mentioned there's things that you can predict and things you can't. What were some of the things you couldn't?
I could, that would be a very long discussion of talking about the subtleties and nuances of the entire offseason because they're subtle. They're subtle differences. So really what you, but in answering it more directly, it would be you can't predict what agents are expecting the market to be.
Ross, I think there's a general feeling out there that Bautista's defensive capabilities slipped in the past year. I just wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on that and where you see him fitting in defensively next season.
Yeah, we're excited. We're excited about Jose as a right fielder. We're also excited about the teammate that he is and the person that he is and his willingness to play multiple positions. As he did last year, he played a little bit of first base, and you know, he's extremely open-minded about that. I think, you know, most likely we'll see him in right field the bulk of our games. So, you know, his health was not 100% last year. He had a shoulder injury in 2015 that impacted his ability to throw in 16. We actually spent some time with him this offseason and saw him working out and seeing things that were extremely encouraging. So he's a great athlete, takes good care of himself. I would expect him to be, you know, a defender that we can rely on.
Ross, did you make Jose an offer in the period that you had the exclusive rights with him beyond the qualifying offer?
You know, I don't want to get into the subtleties and nuances of the negotiation. They were ongoing and extensive and a very collaborative effort.
Ross, what was the sense that you got from Bautista in terms of how much he wanted to stay with Toronto?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I mean, it was clear. It was clear from day one. It was clear from last year. He said that. He has meant it. And it's clear he meant it. He really wanted to be here. So, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, what deals he turned down. I don't know exactly how much money he walked away from. But I would guess that he did. And that's the most abundant fact that you could look to you know, see how much he wanted to be here. But I think probably more important to me or more important to this organization was, you know, what he means to the community and how important it is to him to be in Toronto.
Ross, that second, the wording for the second year of the agreement, where there's a player option, I guess, and a team option. Can you just explain a little bit about that? Who does that really benefit?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a mutual option the first year, and then a vesting option for the third year. So I think it benefits both. So, you know, from a team standpoint, it covers the risk on our side if he doesn't have the best year or has an injury. And from the player standpoint, if he has an incredible year and decides that he wants to go back into free agency, he has that that opportunity. So that's what mutual is. It's a mutual decision. He'll be granted the choice at the beginning of the off season, and then we'll make the decision after if he decides to be here, if it makes sense for us. So there's that flexibility and a lot of time and energy spent on negotiating what those values would be and how they work in our projected payrolls. So it's not just as simple as deciding, you know, what those numbers are. You have to think about how your teams are going to be built. And, you know, he made it clear. I think that's just, it's really clear to see that he spent the time to think through that with Jay Alou, that he wanted to be here and he wanted to be here long term. And he afforded us the flexibility in the event that, you know, he has an injury or he doesn't have quite the year that we think he's going to have. So anytime a team or a player can have flexibility, it's definitely a good thing. So the balance becomes guaranteed money.
Having signed Bautista, are you guys still in on established outfield options, or would you expect to shift your focus to other needs for the team?
Yeah, I think we gotta figure out a way to just win more games. And you know, as I said at the start of the offseason, there's multiple ways to do that. And there's the picturesque ways to do it, and there's the ways with big names and household names. And you know, sometimes it's more run prevention, and sometimes it's more run scoring. So, you know, we'll consider all of them. We're not out on any front, but feel good about our offense and defense at this point, and see the clear need to add to our bullpen. See the clear need for a backup catcher if there are upgrades, because we have those pieces within the organization. But if there are upgrades there. Having said that, you know, we're not going to stop working. There may be a trade or there may be a free agent that still fits on the offensive side.
What do you think Jose is capable of in 2017?
you know, I think he's capable of what he's done year in and year out. The player that he was that made him a six-time All-Star and a guy that has, you know, pretty much for the last 10 years been one of the best hitters, or certainly for the last 8 years, one of the best hitters in baseball. You know, top in votes for MVP. And, you know, I think it's more likely that he has the 2015 season than it is that he has the 2016 season, because I think that was health related.
Michael? Ross, can you give us any detail about the vesting option? What needs to happen for it to vest?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, like there's a few things. The first thing would be the mutual option, and then the next threshold is games played. In both seasons. Yeah.
Ross, you mentioned just a couple questions ago that you're still trying to find ways, whatever way possible, to improve the team. Right now, based on what you know is available, where do the opportunities most likely lie for you guys on that front?
Yeah, you know, I think it could be the positions that are open that I mentioned, the bullpen, backup catcher, if there are upgrades there, there are alternatives, there are pieces there, there are free agents and trades that, you know, we'll continue to work towards. And, you know, if there's a way to upgrade another position in our, you know, obviously there's some that it would be very difficult to upgrade. And obviously when you have free agents that are signed in this year, you know, they're going to play. So, and they're going to be Toronto Blue Jays, certainly for the foreseeable future. But, you know, if there's a way to improve at whether it be the other outfield position or another creative way just to get an upgrade at one position, we are open to it. There's a lot of things that have almost happened this year that still could. So, but, you know, I think making sure that, you know, we add some depth to our bullpen and potentially even to starting pitching is something that we're going to continue to work to do. Yeah, that's correct. And feel incredible about having Dalton Pompey and Daryl Siciliani in that mix as well.
Ross, as a GM, you obviously have to look to the future beyond this season. You look at this team, and obviously there's a sense that you guys are still in the running for making the playoffs. But when you reach the point of when you have to decide that, you know, we're going to go for something now, or we have to maybe start rejigging things for the future, do you think about that all the time, do you have a sort of a point of no return there?
Yeah, I mean, I think thanks to Rogers' communication and thanks to Edward Rogers and his involvement, we don't have to think about that. We don't have to plan for a rebuild. But all 30 teams have to stay agile and understand that we're dealing with human beings, and these assets to organizations are human and change and evolve. I think what we've tried to do is to become more flexible and agile and to sustain championships is to build from within. That just doesn't happen overnight. If we can continue to win while we build from within and make trades like the one last year where we're not giving up talent but adding talent to our system, add Gurriel to our organization, have the draft that we had, put the resources into international, continue to go into free agency, you know, you're threading a needle. But we're focused because we've been given the support and leadership of Edward and Rogers' communication on doing that.
Next question. Michael, back.
Just on the buyout, is that if Jose is the one who exercises or who walks away from the mutual option? And you said that that would happen first before you guys had the chance to exercise it. Do you still have to pay the buyout if he's the one who leaves?
Yes.
Anything further for Ross right now?
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Ross, thank you for the time, and everyone have a great day.
All right. Thank you.
That was Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, discussing Jose Bautista's contract with the Blue Jays. A couple of items, I guess, confirming John Heyman's report that the vesting option, which takes place or which occurs in the third year of the deal, is based on games played in the first 2 years of the contract. I think Richard Deitch, Travis, correct me, never mind. John Heyman, now confusing you with Richard
Don't
Deitch.
Don't let it beat you.
Yeah, it always does beat me, doesn't it? I think John Heyman said it was 300 games. Was it 300 games, that vesting option over the first 2 years at 250? Yeah. So essentially for that to happen, Jose Bautista, first of all, the teams have to agree, or first of all, both sides have to agree to exercise the second year of the contract. At the end of that contract, if Jose has played whatever, 300 games, 250 games, whatever, it wouldn't be 300 games, whatever it is, if Jose has reached that threshold, then the third year automatically vests. After the first year of the contract, it appears from what Ross Atkins said, Kevin Barker, that Jose Bautista gets first choice. Does he want to come back or does he want to leave? At that point, the Toronto Blue Jays either say, we want you back, we agree with you, or, you know, they move on. So that explains the mutual option. We need to know how many games are involved in the vesting option. But let's face it, if Jose Bautista needs to average 140 games in the next 2 years, or 150 games in the next 2 years to have that option vest, that's probably not going to happen.
Well, I think he could do it better if he played more first base. Has a lot to do with Justin Smoke, how he gets off and those kind of things, right?
That was the biggest statement to me.
Yeah.
Ross Atkins saying that the Jays were excited to have Jose in right field, but they were also excited at his willingness to play multiple positions. Now, in the past, he has done that. He's played first base. He's played third base. At times, the move into third base, since he's become an everyday right fielder, did not work out. He was not comfortable playing there. Have said this, Kevin, I fully believe, and I agree with Ross, Jose Bautista is going to be their everyday right fielder this year.
Yeah.
But he's going to play more games at first base than we think he's going to play right now, or than a lot of people think.
But my first question would be to that is, can a 36-year-old do that? Can he figure out ways to get ready to play right field and then, say, play first base two or three times a week? Can you do that and be the offensive player that you want to be?
I'll ask you, because
At 36, that's why I'm asking. That's a different animal. That's going to be something that me and you're going to have to walk up to Jose Bautista and ask him.
Yeah.
Does he think he's capable? Because it's all about him being an offensive player. You want to get the most out of him you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And the defensive side's a plus, right? I mean, let's face it. That's why he's here, is to get and score as many runs as you possibly can to help out a young pitching staff and try and get you to where you want to be ultimately at the end of the season. That's why here, wherever he's playing and whatever he does on the defensive side, it's a plus, right?
Yep.
So it's just going to be very interesting to watch a guy at his age that wants to be what he wants to be, which is go out and have a great offensive year so he can go back on the market and maybe get that 2 or 3 year deal somewhere else, right? Basically, that's why he's doing this.
Yep.
He wants to do that. Does he think he's capable of doing that, playing first base, maybe DHing a little bit, and playing right field? That's a lot. That's just a lot from one guy to, you know, it's for a guy like myself that used to try and play first base, the days of just sticking Mike Piazza at first base are over. Mm-hmm. We've seen bad first basemen hurt teams. Defense just matters too much nowadays. You have to catch the ball, and especially in the American League East, when the Red Sox are that much better, the Yankees are getting better, you just have to catch the ball. The more outs you give a team, obviously the bad things are going to happen.
But you see, I would argue this. The weakest aspect of Jose Bautista's game is what would you say right now? Throwing because of the shoulder?
Yeah, that's why they have cutoff guys.
Well, but my point is that how much of an issue is that at first base?
What do you really want him to do in the outfield? You want him to
stay healthy enough that he can hit 40 bombs. 100%. That's what I want.
And the same with first base, right? If you can't get to the bag, start closer to the bag. But again, these are things that he's concentrating more on playing defense than he is on the offensive side. And why is he here?
Offense.
100%. So do you really want him, you know, going in after a game and thinking about how I'm going to be a better first baseman?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. So this is, again, we're probably, obviously, a lot of this has to do with Justin Smoke, and can he, you know, not strike out 112 times and 299 at-bats? He's going to have to do something. I think that's what he did last year. That number's way too high. You know, a lot of that has to do with how he's going to do it. Steve Pierce is going to play there. There's a lot of decisions that have to be made there.
And John Gibbons mentioned yesterday that at least as far as he was concerned, Kendrys Morales is going to play a little bit of first base. I'm hoping that I'm not covering those games.
Okay, well, games you got to figure 2016, he DH in Kansas City, 138 games. He played first 7 games. He played right field 5 games. You really want him playing first base? Again, and these are more questions you have to ask. Batista's going to need days off. Who's going to DH? Morales is one of your biggest bats, and he's protecting Donaldson.
And Donaldson's going to need – and Gibby said the same thing yesterday. Donaldson's going to need some more games off this year than he had last year. You know, Tulowitzki, I mean, we're not even talking about injuries.
100%.
Which at some point somebody's going to go in the DL.
100%.
One of those guys are going to go in the DL. It's a January 19th edition of Baseball Central. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, we gave you live coverage. We brought you live coverage, I should say, of Ross Atkins' news conference at the Rogers Center. We're hoping to be joined by Ross later on in the next hour as Kevin and I break down the Blue Jays offseason. I mean, it seems like a good time to do that. What with Jose now back, Kevin, we'll talk a little bit in the next hour about what we would like to see the Blue Jays do, what situations they still have to address. But we both know Jose a little bit. We've been around him a little bit. Jose Bautista is, in some ways, could be a bit of a diva. He's very much into himself. He's very aware of his value as a player, which, believe me, is not a bad thing. My point, though, is this is a guy who the market, who baseball, the chattering classes of baseball thought was going to get or at least ask for a 5-year contract worth $30 million a year. Now he's coming back to the Blue Jays for $18 million. I got to ask you, how concerned would you be having Jose Bautista in this clubhouse? A Jose Bautista who may be unhappy in this clubhouse.
Why would he be unhappy? Here's my question to you. Why is he not on another good team in Major League Baseball? The first thing that would pop in my mind is they don't think he's as good a clubhouse guy as everybody here thinks he is. That's one of the main reasons, because why wouldn't he be with the Red Sox? They're trying to win a World Series. You want a DH that's right-handed, hits a bunch of home runs with the short porch and left? There has to be a reason why that is. He took a 1-year deal. I mean, these are questions that, you know, when you dig a little bit deeper into it and you're asking yourself, well, why would Jose Bautista not be a good clubhouse guy in Toronto? Well, everything points to that he should be and he wants to be, and he's taking this as a, hey, thank you for the opportunity. He could be sitting home till June or July. You know, it's more of, right now, I don't think there's any other option. Let's face it, if he had a better deal, somebody offered him 3 years, say Minnesota Twins offered him 3 years for $65 million, would he be in Minnesota or would he be here for 1 year? I mean, these are all questions you have to ask yourself. And to me right now, I think this is a perfect fit for the Blue Jays, because the Blue Jays are hoping for $18 million and whatever the other things are, that they're finding lightning in a bottle and they're protecting their biggest asset. To me, it all gets back to that. Is how do you get Josh Donaldson the best pitches possible? Because when there's no Edwin, now pitchers are going, why would we pitch to him? Well, now you have, hopefully, Batista's going to be on base, and then you're going to have Morales standing over there. He's right-handed. What did he do? He hit 11 home runs right-handed. He hit 19 left-handed. He can hit. You know, he hit 3-11, I think, last year with runners in scoring position. These are all big deals. These are things that opposing teams think about, and it's going to get better pitches for Donaldson to hit. So, to me, this is a win-win for everybody. It just bodes well for Bautista to basically, for the first time, you know, zip it, keep it shut a little bit, go out and do your job. I know it's funny, you know, it's funny that I say that and you laugh, but wouldn't it just be great for him to just go out and hit 30, 35 homers and drive in 100 runs? And, hey, again, I think there's just a little bit more into it that teams like the Astros and wouldn't pay him – you know, $18 million for a year for a guy with this much talent. Well, there has to be other reasons for that.
And Kevin, you know, we had Dan Duquette, the general manager of the Orioles, on our show, on the Jeff Blair show, the winter meetings, say that he told Jay Alou, Jose Bautista's agent, I'm not going to make an offer to your client because our fans don't like him. Now, Dan, about a month later, walked it back slightly, but not entirely. In a point of fact, that was the second time. That was the second time that he, you know, that he made that statement to, he made the statement also to Baltimore writers earlier at the winter meetings. I know Dan can be off the cuff a little bit.
He's honest.
And,
yeah.
And I wonder, and, you know, hopefully at some point we'll hear from Jose Bautista. By the way, how great would it have been for Jose Bautista to be at this news conference today to put aside or allay any of the concerns about what we're talking about? How happy is he
about
to be back
mood,
here?
Right?
Yeah, I'm really frankly disappointed that Jose isn't here, and maybe there are legitimate reasons for it. That's fine. But if I'm Jose Bautista and I've heard a general manager say that our fans just don't like you, I wonder if even Jose, who, you know, he's not a wilting flower. Jose's a guy who can be in your face and is used to people being in his face. It's on some level as a professional athlete. Doesn't that kind of hurt you a bit? Or doesn't that kind of piss you off knowing that another team thinks, you know, you could be a pretty good player, but God, nobody likes you in our city.
Yeah, well, I think it's more of most of these teams are trying to get young. They need veteran guys like a Jose Bautista to come in and teach the young guys how to do it. Mm-hmm. That means on and off the field. That means how to talk to the press. That means all of these things go into, if we're going to pay you one-year deals and give you a bunch of money, we want you to do all of these things. Just not go out and hit 45 home runs. We want you to show the young guys how to talk to the media, how to, you know, talk to the umpires, how to do all of these things that you're supposed to do the way we're paying you. And I'm not real sure that every team thinks that way of Jose Bautista. It's, he can go out this year and do exactly what I said, and you laughed when I said just go out, you know, dig in at home plate, try and hit as many fastballs as you can, as hard as you can, help your team win. Don't turn around and yell at every umpire because they call a strike on you. You're not the only guy they've called strikes on. It's do that. Playing the game the way it's supposed to be played, and everything else will fall in place because this guy has talent. I talked to enough people last year and asked them, because we talked about bat speed. When you get older, when I got older, I just lost bat speed. I couldn't hit the fastball anymore. And that's a hard thing to swallow. It's a hard thing to say, go home and look in the mirror and say, I can't hit the thing that I always are used to hitting is a fastball. That's why I hung it up. Well, I asked around, is that why Jose Bautista had a bad year? Could have been a little bit of injury, but the league made the adjustment. It wasn't any more, let's see how hard we can throw four-seam fastballs in and in off the plate, because we saw what he did to those. He cracked concrete in left field. That's what he does. Well, okay, we're going to take a little bit off. We're going to have some movement on it. And he just didn't make the adjustment consistently all year. You saw a bunch of rollovers. You saw, and then a veteran guy that gets older and thinks he has to add on and do more. It's just hard for him to do that. So, to me, that's one thing I'm going to be looking for this year is if he hits in front of Donaldson, we know he's going to get a bunch of fastballs. He just is. What kind of fastballs are those going to be? What the at-bat's going to be like? Can he consistently lay off pitches that he got in 2016? Because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And guys have book on him now that say, okay, you don't have to throw at 98 in to get him out. Throw at 93 with a little bit of movement, let him get himself out. So it's going to be very interesting to see if he's a smarter hitter. Not so much a talented hitter, a smarter hitter. Because the older you get, things just don't work the way they should. You have to be smarter.
Right.
So these are going to be very interesting things. This is why I said I don't think the first base, right field, DH thing is going to work.
I don't think it's going to work.
It's going to have to be one or the other.
We want to welcome now our television viewers who were watching Ross Atkins' news conference, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. A January 19th edition of Baseball Central will be joined in a few minutes by the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, who addressed the media a little earlier, talking about Jose Bautista's contract with the team, 1 year guaranteed, roughly $18 million guaranteed, 18.5 if you throw in the buyout clauses. The first option year, there's two option years. The first year is a mutual option. Essentially, Jose gets first choice at the end of the year. If he decides he wants to come back to the Blue Jays can either say, okay, we want you back, or they can say, you know what, adios, amigo, you're gone. Or Jose Bautista can tell the Blue Jays, I'm going to attempt to go back into the free agent market again. There's also another option year in the contract it vests if Jose Bautista plays a certain number of games over the first 2 years of the contract. So yeah,
I think it'd be better to hear him say, I want to go somewhere else. That means he had a monster year,
was,
right?
Look, that was the point I made about this. Let's be clear. This was nobody's first choice. Unless you're a diehard fan of Jose Bautista, and you know, and he's your favorite player, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Jays went after Dexter Fowler. First of all, the Blue Jays wanted to get younger, more athletic, more left-handed. That was the game plan going into the offseason. That hasn't worked out so far. It's been that type of offseason in baseball. Players haven't gotten what they thought they're going to get. Teams haven't been able to address their issues. So the Jays wanted to do that. That hasn't transpired, but what they did do, they tried to go after Dexter Fowler. Didn't get Dexter Fowler. We know they kicked tires on trades for Andrew McCutchen, maybe Charlie Blackmon, maybe even J.D. Martinez. Nothing happened there. They didn't bring Edwin Encarnacion back. So essentially, with all due respect, this was the Blue Jays' fourth option to bring Jose Bautista back. Mm-hmm. From Jose Bautista's point of view, think back to spring training last year. The story came out he wanted a five-year contract at $150 million. Nobody denied it. Nobody came out and said it was entirely accurate, but nobody denied it. Jose Bautista goes into free agency. Houston doesn't go after him, doesn't get him. They go to Carlos Beltran instead. Boston, a team that was looking to replace David Ortiz, they have other issues. They don't go after him. Mm-hmm. The Yankees, they don't go after him. We heard, and think about this, we heard that one of the teams interested in him was the Tampa Bay Rays. The Cleveland Indians may have had an interest in him even after they signed Edwin. My point being that if Jose Bautista's goal going into the offseason was to make as much money over as many years as he can with a contending team, didn't work out for him. So this is not necessarily a marriage of convenience. I would call this almost a shotgun marriage, baseball's version of a shotgun marriage.
Yeah.
And my hope, and I think my feeling is that as much as Jose Bautista is a calculating, business-minded guy, that he realizes what happened with this market, and there's no point in coming back to the Blue Jays with your tail between your legs. There's no point coming back, because you know what? The market didn't work in your favor. You're not the only person. Ask Mark Trumbo how the market's working. Yep. He's still out there. Ask Chris Carter how the market's working. He's still out there. Mm-hmm. Ask Mike Napoli how the market's working. He's still out there. So I think if Jose sits back or stands back and thinks about this, he's going to go, you know what? Yeah, it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, but I'm back in a city that likes me. I'm in a country that likes me. I've got business interests here. This is the only place, again, with all due respect to Jose Bautista, this is the only place he has a brand. Any other city in Major League Baseball, he's just another guy. Good player when he's healthy, but he's just another guy. Toronto and Canada is where Jose Bautista made his mark. It's where he sells product. It's where his jerseys are sold. It's where the booster juice, free advertising. Anyhow, it's where the booster juice stuff happened.
I like him.
It's the place that got him voted into the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So that says to me that perhaps this is going to not be as much of an issue as a lot of people think it is. And I'll tell you this as
why
well.
Why would it be an issue? That's my question. I'm going to keep asking that.
I mean, someone gives me 18
million. Carlos Beltran, as you've mentioned, has made, what, $92 million or something? Signing one-year deal since he's whatever age he was?
35.
What's wrong with that?
Carlos Beltran since 30. Well, and look what David Ortiz and the Boston Red Sox did. That's another example that comes up here. David Ortiz finished out his career with the Boston Red Sox in a bunch of small-term contracts. That's entirely possible with Jose Bautista.
Throughout his entire career up until this point, as of right now, until the end of the season, he knows what he has to do. Mm-hmm. There's no gray area now. Yep. It's put up or shut up time.
Yeah. And by extension, if that decision about the mutual option at the end of the year is really difficult, that suggests to me that the Jays have had one hell of a year and Jose Bautista's had one hell of a year.
There you go.
Because now Jose Bautista's going to think, okay, I had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
Do I want to go into the free agent market? The Jays are going to go, God, we had a good year. This guy came through for us. You know, Do we want to hang on to this guy? It's maybe we want
to
hang on.
Well, there's a lot of questions that we have to have conversations about.
But I think it all gets back to this. It all gets back to this. Somebody on Twitter says, it's 2 a.m. and the only girl left in the bar is your ex-girlfriend. You look at each other and say, what the heck?
Huh?
I mean, that's essentially...
Hey,
you know, that
she can hit 40 home runs. You know, she can hit second for the Blue Jays.
And
that's perfect. And he's hit a great lineup.
He's in a great lineup.
I think that's
lineup.
What we forget. And he's hitting in front of one of the best players. That's where I'd put him. Yeah. Now, I don't know if Gibby's going to hit him second or not. But you would think if there's right now a perfect guy to hit second because he gets on base a lot. And
who leads off for you? Because Travis is hurt.
Regardless of who other leads off, Batista hits in front in my lineup.
Yeah.
Donaldson.
Yeah.
Whoever leads off, whether that's Batista, whether that's Travis, where whoever, Ezekiel Carrera, whoever it is, Batista hits in front of Donaldson. And then it's Morales, and then it's everybody else, whoever's doing well. And you know, and I think Justin Smoke is going to play a huge role in all of this.
Yeah, I need to find a candle to light.
Well, you know, you needed to have a guy that you could light candles for because, you know, your boy's gone.
Because R.E. Dickey's gone.
So, you know, it's just... What was the numbers that I were looking up that he had 112 strikeouts or whatever? Yeah, he had 299 at-bats, 112 strikeouts. Justin Smoke, you can't do that.
No.
You have to make adjustments. Now you know that you're going to play more than you did last year in 2016. Make the adjustment. You know how the league tries to get you out now. It's no secret.
Well, and let's also be clear here. We're talking about how the offseason played out for Jose Bautista. I would rather have Jose Bautista on my team and in right field than Ezekiel Carrera is my everyday right fielder. This is a better team with Jose Bautista than without Jose Bautista
or
anybody else.
And it's scary.
Yeah.
That's what you want, right? You want fear. You want managers, opposing managers, and you want the starting pitcher, whoever's on the mound, to have to think about how they get through a lineup. Without Bautista in it, would it not be easier? Of course it would. Because, you know, you could go down this lineup and have faults on certain guys, that things they have to work on and things they're going to have to do for this team to have success. A lot of things are going to have to fall in place. Can they do that? This only helps to have him in a lineup with experience. And I don't know if I believe in motivation. I think it has a lot to do with you have to adjust to the league because that league's adjusted to you. He's going to have to do that now.
Well, let's bring in the man who, I guess he hosted the news conference.
He ran it, didn't he?
He ran it. Yeah. Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, joining Kevin Barker and myself on Baseball Central. Ross, thank you so much for doing this today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
So somebody on Twitter said to me, it's like it's 2 a.m. and the only girl left in the bar is your ex-girlfriend. You look at each other and say, what the heck? Is that being unfair to this to you and to Jose Bautista and getting this deal done?
Yeah, in more ways than one. I'm a little bit uncomfortable responding altogether to that, but
I figured I would do that, Ross, because I know that one of the things Edwin Encarnacion's agent tried to do when you guys talked was, talk about it. It's like a relationship, you know, just because you're dating other people. You're right, we probably shouldn't go down there. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, hey, we're elated to have Jose here. We really are. That he is meant a lot to this organization. He means a lot to the Toronto Blue Jays. He means a lot to the city of Toronto, and we're a better team that he's here.
Now, Ross, I every time I looked at that lineup before you brought in Jose Bautista and there was no Edwin, I thought, who was going to protect your biggest asset, which was Josh Donaldson? How much did this signing of Bautista go into that? You think... How do you get this guy pitches to hit? If I have a guy like Bautista hitting in front of him or behind him, that's only going to help.
Yeah, and Kendrys won't hurt either. You know, I think having the three of those guys in the middle of the lineup is going to be one of the better lineups in baseball. So, you know, here we are again as a feared offense, and Jose was integral to making sure that happened because you're absolutely right, Kevin, that, you know, if you can pitch around a guy or – if a guy is, just getting pitched too aggressively in, whatever it may be, having that balance in your lineup and it being a little bit longer is extremely valuable. And I think, you know, there's not going to be too many pitching staffs that are going to want to come into Rogers Center again next year.
Ross, we saw at the winter meetings, on the very last day of the winter meetings, you and J.L. Liu having what seemed to be a fairly animated discussion right down sort of in Media Row. MLB Network was there. We were there. MLB Radio was there. I think a lot of us left the winter meetings thinking, okay, this has become really contentious. When did it change? You know, when did the cold light of day set in, I guess, would be the way I would put it.
You know, that was, Jay and I have known each other for a long time. So, you know, I think it was a very honest and open dialogue. I think the challenge becomes in any negotiation is when you are, quote-unquote, positioning and, quote-unquote, still considering alternatives, it can become frustrating. It can become stagnant. And so that's all that was. And, you know, I think it was probably right about that time that, you know, our interactions increased, the number of those interactions increased. So, you know, but there's so many balls in the air for him and for us that, you know, it probably isn't until you start to exchange numbers and put things in writing that things move. And, you know, that was roughly a week and a half to 2 weeks ago where that started to occur.
Well, sorry.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Now, Ross, I heard you say something about Jose May play a little bit of first base. He's going to be mainly in right field. Now, when I got a little bit older, it was just harder for me to play multiple positions. It was a lot of thought. I was more worried about trying to hit a fastball because certain things just didn't work the way they were supposed to work, and I didn't really want to worry about playing multiple positions. How hard do you think that would be for him to do? We know he's a great athlete. He takes care of his body. But let's face it, he's here to hit, and he's here to protect a lot of people and make this team better on the offensive side. And what he does defensively is that's a plus. Is that going to be an issue for him to play multiple positions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair question. But I think really what it comes down to is the way we're built today, he doesn't need to play first base. Mm. But the way we're built in 2 months, you just never know, right? It could be an injury. It could be something that changes in our lineup. It could be performance. So having someone that is as athletic as he is, and if he could play some first base, that's a benefit. That's all. And it's more about his attitude and the spirit of him being open to it is the reason I made the comment.
Ross, you also said that you went down, or you, I should say, the team went down and spent some time with Jose in the offseason and watched him work out. What did you see during those workouts? Did you need to have any fears allayed down there, or was it just a matter of wanting to, you know, make sure that the guy was, you know, was basically the guy that finished the year with you?
And why not is really the reason that we did it is let's any information that we can get and that gives us confidence to, you know, add a member to this organization, we'll do. We had incredible knowledge of Jose. Obviously, we know him as well as he knows us. But things and in the world of professional athletes, things change and things evolve, and things were looking up for Jose, and we wanted to see it. So it wasn't so much an evaluation as much as spending time with him and laying our eyes on things that we were hearing.
How many games does he have to play in the first 2 years for the third year to vest? Can you tell us that, or?
Yeah, I'd rather not get into the subtleties of the contract. But I mean, essentially, if the first thing that has to happen is the mutual option needs to be picked up, and if he's a healthy player for those 2 years, then it would vest.
I've covered teams who have had players on similar contracts where it became an issue. Season didn't go well. In this case, it was a pitcher. It was Oil Can Boyd. The Expos just started cutting back his starts. Cost him a vesting option. Is there any concern that when you do something like that, you're also kind of putting your manager in a position where, okay, it's not just a matter of necessarily is Jose healthy and ready to play today. It's almost like you have to pull a calculator out and go, geez, if I sit him here, am I going to have to play him here? Because I don't want to end up with him being three games shy of what he needs for that to vest.
So in this case, I'm not concerned. You know, I think one, the first step will be the mutual option. And then the second step he has to be have two very healthy seasons.
Sure.
So, and then to the point of putting the manager in the position, we will be front and center with John Gibbons on that. If we're in that position, that's a very good position to be in. So, and we're going to do right. We're going to do right by the person, by the team, by the organization, by being out in front about it and extremely open about it and communicate with the player. So not a concern.
You used the word leadership to describe Edward Rodgers' role in this, and I think this is intriguing a lot of people because it's something that people, I think, have frankly maybe wanted to see in terms of this team. I don't want you to get into any specifics or anything, but is it safe to say that Edward Rodgers is more involved in the day-to-day operations of the team now than perhaps last year, or last year's when you came into the picture?
Yeah, and I would say only because of that is here's what I would say. Yes, okay. He is, and it's just it like anything else. It takes time for that relationship to evolve, and he and Mark have an incredible relationship that is going to continue to get better. And he's been great with us. He's been a leader, and he's been involved. He cares. He's a great person, and we've already, this organization has benefited greatly.
Good stuff, Ross. We know it's been a busy day for you. We thank you so much for your patience, and thanks again for joining us today. Take care.
Okay. All right, Jeff and Kevin, thanks for having me on, guys. Have a good day.
You too. That's Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. So there you go. And I had said in my show that I'd been told by, or I'd heard, that you heard Ross Atkins say this thing kind of came together in roughly 10 days. That's when mm-hmm. it really started to heat up. And I'd been told that essentially Edward Rodgers had he'd basically made more money available. And what that means down the road, I don't pretend to know. But I think you heard Ross Atkins say that, Edward Rodgers is becoming a little more involved in this team in the day-to-day basis, which is understandable because the more the relationship grows between Mark Shapiro and Edward Rodgers, I mean, frankly, the better.
Sure.
The better for everybody. What did you hear from Ross that surprising? I mean, he seemed to walk back the whole notion of Jose playing first base.
I'm with you. I wish Jose would have been there so we could ask these questions of Jose and how's he feel being here. And you could just see the two together and see the mood and those kind of things. That would have been sort of nice mm-hmm. to see that. I think after the, from what I saw afar, I was sitting on my couch watching when you were talking about the Edwin thing and the offer was the 4-year at mm-hmm. $80 million and then he signed for, the 3-year for 60 plus. You know, they're getting a guy of that stature for 15 or 20 million less. I think you had to make this move. I think this is one of those things where you have to bring in a guy like Jose Bautista. It's win now. You can think about 2018 when 2018 comes, mm-hmm. but right now your team's really, really good. It took 22 years to get where they're at now.
Right.
And the last couple of years, they've been a really good team. And, Josh Donaldson's not going to be here forever. Troy Tulowitzki's not going to be here forever. Russell Martin's not going to be here forever. And you would think most managers from afar looking in at this team would be, hey, you still got a pretty good team. Mm. Let's add one piece to it.
Sure.
Bring a little bit more attitude, a little bit more fear to it. And losing the Edwin thing, hey, let's face it. He's one of the best pure-hitting clutch players that's ever been in Toronto.
We are. We're gonna take a break, and we're going to come back. And Kevin and I are going to talk about, okay, they got Jose Bautista signed. What is the next step for the Toronto Blue Jays this offseason? It's Baseball Central and Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.